Welcome to the Choose Life Radio Network. Your host is Jill Taylor. Every week we bring you a candid conversation with someone who's making a difference for the cause of life. And now here's Jill to introduce today's guest on Choose Life Radio.
Welcome to Choose Life Radio. I am Jill Taylor, and I am your host for a very exciting second interview with Kelly Lester. If you missed last week, please go back and listen, because it's her story. It's a powerful story, and we can learn a lot. Those of us who are in the church can learn a lot from what she experienced. And you can find that at chooseliferadio.com. But today, I want to talk with Kelly about a different thing. I think, Kelly, you told me that you were involved in working in an abortion clinic. Can you describe that?
I can. Well, let me tell you a little bit of the backstory of that, Jill, because that's not something people just go and do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's definitely...
Especially people who are listening today, they probably don't go do that.
Although, you know, I work for a ministry called And Then There Were None, and we have over 660 former workers. And so it's much more prevalent than you would think. With 40 years of the abortion industry being out there, you never know who has worked in an abortion industry. But I was raped by the time I was 15, found out I was pregnant, went and had my first abortion, and it changed my entire life. I was sedated during that abortion, and so didn't have a lot of memory of the actual experience, but definitely carried a lot of shame from it. Well, several years later, I was pregnant again. And I did not want to have the surgical appointment because of how that was, and called for an abortion and was told, hey, you can do the abortion pill. It is very easy. It is much less expensive. And it's basically just like restarting your period. And so it's quick, it's painless, and it's totally safe. And I thought, okay, well, that sounds great. And so I went and did that procedure, which at the time you go to the doctor for the first part of the procedure, then you go home for the second part of the procedure. And so I was home alone and had a chemical abortion in my apartment by myself. The first 48 hours were absolute hell on earth. I was extreme cramping, throwing up, bleeding excessively. I thought I was going to die. And that waned a little bit after the first 48 hours, but for the next 6 to 8 weeks, it was consistent cramping and bleeding, and it was a horrible experience. It was not quick. It was not easy. It was not painless. It was awful, and it was very traumatic, and I ended up having to move from my apartment. Well, after that, people say, why would you ever go work in the abortion industry? Well, my life at that time was crazy. I was running drugs. I was selling drugs. I was drinking excessively, working in bars. My life was going crazy, and I wanted to do something to help people. I did not have a college degree. I worked in restaurants and bars, and so I was looking for a job where I could help people. And I looked in my newspaper, so I'm dating myself a little bit with that, and found that a women's clinic was hiring for a receptionist. And I thought, well, that's something that I can do. And so, again, dating myself, I looked at the ad and went to my computer and put the address in my computer through MapQuest, you know, printed out the directions, and got in my car and drove to the address that was on the newspaper listing. And it was where I'd gone for my abortions. There was a moment in the parking lot of like, what am I doing here? You know, I'm going into this place where I had horrible experiences. But the reality is, Jill, I thought my experiences had to be unique to only me. Because surely if that was the normal experience that people had, we would hear about it. And so I thought I was the one-off. I even thought maybe this is part of my punishment for having my abortions. for disappointing God, for doing those bad things. This was part of the punishment, like I deserved that. But certainly that was not the normal experience. And so I walked into that building, and I got hired as the receptionist, making $18 an hour, which is very good money nowadays for a receptionist, but 20 years ago, that was incredible money. So I started working as the receptionist and did your typical duties, made appointments, answered the phone, but I had several other jobs as well. One was the reception area, and what I was told to do was edit magazines. And so I would take the magazines and I would look through them, and if there was a picture of a happy couple or a diaper commercial or an engagement ring ad or something that might cue a maternal instinct in the woman sitting in that reception area, we would cut those pictures out because we didn't want to dissuade her from having her abortion. The other thing was, in the state of Virginia at that time, there was a 24-hour waiting period. So oftentimes, the boyfriend or the husband or the partner would come with the girl the first appointment for her to have her consultation. All the guys would be sitting in the waiting room. We would take all the women back to the back, show them a short video, give them some quick paperwork, and then release them. But what we would do is, when those women were back for their consultation, we would turn the heat very, very hot, or the air conditioning very, very cold, because we wanted him to get up and leave. So that when she came out, we would say to her, "You see, he won't even support you for this appointment. What makes you think he'll support you for a child?"
Oh, my word. How sadistic. That's just unbelievable.
It is. And you hear that, and hopefully everyone that hears that says the same thing. And so you think, Kelly, why would you do that? That's so manipulative. That's so coercive. Why would you do that? But it was phrased to me as, "Kelly, you of all people know how hard this decision is." I'm like, "Yes, I do know how hard this decision is." "Well, we want to make it as easy as possible for her. We want to remove all barriers from her making this decision because this is what's best for her. This is what was best for you, right? This is what's best for her." And so when they told me to do that, I followed in line. And they were paying me $18 an hour, which certainly helped, you know, promote that ideology.
Oh, I'm just blessed that you're opening this window into that world so that people can really understand. Sometimes I hear people in church say, "I've tried to make my money donated to not just the church, but other good organizations like Planned Parenthood." And I just want to go, just like, oh, come on. They have the ability to advertise in a way that it looks like they want to help women.
Absolutely.
They want to help us. And what you're telling us is the truth. And God wants the truth to be spoken.
Well, it gets worse, believe it or not. If that was the worst that we did, what I'm going to tell you now is even going to be even more horrifying. Because the other part of my job as the receptionist was the recovery room. So the facility that I worked at, the majority of the appointments that we did were under a sedation appointment. And so it's a twilight sedation. If anybody's ever had, sometimes with oral surgery, they will do this, knee surgery, colonoscopy, those kinds of procedures where you are awake, but you have no memory of the experience. That was the sedation that we used. And so these women would come in. It was $25 more for that sedation. So we pushed them all to do it, give them the sedation, do the procedure. And my job as the receptionist was 20 minutes after they had gotten off the table to come in to give them some juice, to give them some crackers, to give them their clothes, their birth control, and to release them. When you have had that kind of a sedation, there are follow-up procedures that you're supposed to do. You're supposed to check their heart rate. You're supposed to check the blood pressure, you know, those kinds of things. I did none of those things. I was not a doctor. I was not a nurse. I was a receptionist. But what was more horrifying than all of that was the number of women that were in that recovery room hemorrhaging from their procedures. Perforated uterus, or bowels or cervix. And when that perforation happens, some of your listeners may have seen the movie Unplanned. This is in the movie Unplanned. This was Abby's experience, but my experience was the same. When that procedure had perforated something and there was a complication and women were hemorrhaging, what we would do is we would take them back to the procedure room, give them more of the anesthesia, and we would fix whatever had happened to them. But we would never tell those women what had happened to them. And so when people say abortion is healthcare, we first know abortion is not healthcare because healthcare does not harm. It only helps. And in abortion, both people are harmed, the baby and the woman. But in healthcare, if your, again, we'll go back to that colonoscopy. If your doctor had perforated you during your colonoscopy and had taken you back to the procedure room and repaired what mistake had happened and never told you what had happened, you would sue that doctor 100 times for malpractice. But in the abortion industry, that is happening on a regular basis. And so I saw that, and I realized that there were women who we were not just ending their pregnancy that day, but we were ending their potential for ever being able to have children. But I saw it all the time.
We're going to take a quick break today with Kelly Lester, but this is important to understand about these organizations. It's not just what they call it, healthcare. It's death to a child, and really death in many ways to a mom. We'll be right back at Choose Life Radio.
Jill will be back in a moment, but in the meantime, I want to share a thought from Dog Stories, a book by James Herriot, an English veterinarian and storyteller. In his down-home way, Herriot wrote about a dog who was hit by a car on a country road. Traveling not far behind, a young couple picked up the injured dog and took it to the closest vet, who was James Herriot. While attending the dog's mangled leg, the rickety table nearly collapsed. Herriot instinctively grabbed the dog, and the couple, who were strategically located at the table, immediately braced it with their knees till surgery was over. Although the positions were awkward and the table heavy, the couple held on. They took the dog with them and nursed him while on vacation. The next week, they stopped by with the dog and asked Herriot to check on his leg. Without any prompting from the vet, they assumed their roles as table braces while Herriot placed the dog on the rickety table. The author included the story in his book to highlight the healing that had taken place within the dog's body. But as Jill and I talked, it's the young couple who grabs our attention. While not veterinarians, they made the surgery and follow-up possible. I can't help but draw a parallel between the couple whose knees held steady the table and you, our Choose Life Radio family, who for nearly 5 years have held steady and braced this life-affirming radio and podcast ministry. Those associated with the Choose Life Radio family realize how important our family of contributors is. Without your prayer and generous financial support, we wouldn't be on radio. But with you and friends like you steadying the table, we continue to share the sanctity of human life. In an effort to keep steady the surgery table, so to speak, your gift today is more important than ever, whatever amount you may choose to give. You can send your gift today through our online portal at chooseliferadio.com, push the donate button, and make your gift online. That's chooseliferadio.com. Or you can send your gift to Choose Life Radio, Post Office Box 36622, Canton, Ohio, 44735. Thank you for sending your generous gift today. You make it possible to share the value and sanctity of life on this station.
Welcome back to Choose Life Radio. I'm Jill Taylor, and I am so excited about what we have been able to bring for you with this guest, Kelly Lester. And I want you to know before I turn back to her, she is a speaker. She's an excellent speaker. And if you have an event coming up for your pregnancy center, this is your gal. And she'll travel, but she's so worth it. Her story touches hearts and gets deep into the issue of what we deal with in the pregnancy centers. So Kelly Lester, I'm going to give you the rest of the time. You just finish your story up. I just love what you're doing, how God is being so rewarded by your honesty. Thank you.
Well, thank you. So I was working in the abortion industry, you know, where I went to help women. And that's the reality. I'm sure there's some listeners that are sidewalk advocates or people that, you know, stand outside of abortion facilities. And you need to know that most of the people that are there, they really, truly believe that they are helping women. And I know that for those of us on the other side, it's hard for you to even comprehend how they could be that deceived. But they truly believe, as much as you believe they are hurting women, they truly believe that they are helping women. And that is what I thought. That's what I went there to do. That is what I thought initially. But little by little, the scales were taken off my eyes when I saw the reality of what was going on. I saw women that were coming in, quote unquote, shouting their abortion. And I saw women that were coming in with children in tow that were conflicted about their options. And in the recovery room, every single one of those women was sad because they realized that they had taken the life of their child. Now, many of them would leave, you know, shouting their abortion and those kinds of things because they had to do something to cover up that shame. And that's something else that we need to realize is right now, this argument has gotten so aggressive. The other side especially has gotten so aggressive and so angry and so hateful in what they say and what they do. But when you see those people, I want you to see a woman who has likely experienced an abortion. And when she experienced that abortion, she was told, this is going to be empowering. This is the best thing you can do for yourself. This is the best thing you can do for your other children or your future children. This is the right move for you. This is good for you. And then in that moment, in that recovery room, she has the reality of what she has done. But she's not being told that it's okay to feel sad about what you've done, or it's okay to have regret about what you've done. So those women take that emotion and they turn it into anger. And that is what we are seeing all over this country right now, is women who are angry because they were wronged by the abortion industry, but they don't feel like they have the right to say that. And I certainly didn't for many years. I left the abortion industry after about a year because I did see that we were harming women. And, you know, took me down a path of destruction, more destruction, and then was radically saved, which, again, I'm not going to tell the whole story because your listeners will have to go listen to last week. But God saved me and healed me. But there was an aspect of my story. I would started to share my story a little bit with women's groups and different people, but I would never talk about working in the abortion industry because that was something that I'd never met anybody else who had done. And I thought, that was something nobody could ever forgive me. And when I would share it, people would get a look over their face like, oh, that's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. And so I didn't talk about that part. I went through lots of healing, you know, Rachel's Vineyard and Forgiven and Set Free for all of my abortions that I had myself had. But I never got healing for my time working in the abortion industry. I started working for a pregnancy resource center, and this movie came out called Unplanned, and it was offered for pregnancy centers as a fundraiser. And so we did a showing of the movie Unplanned. I'd never heard of Abby Johnson, and we show the movie, and I'm looking on the screen, and I'm seeing my story before my eyes. And I thought, oh my gosh, this part of my story that I've never really shared, I need to get healing from. That was in October, and then in January, we went to the March for Life up in D.C., and saw that there was going to be a thing called Coffee with Quitters, where Abby Johnson, the Renun team, was going to be there with some former workers. That's what we call quitters. And I thought, I'm going to go meet them and talk to them and hear their stories. And I listened to these women share, and I thought, my experience was not isolated. This was what they shared. I looked at how they spoke with each other, and I thought, wow, I need that kind of healing. And so I went up to them and told them, you know, that I worked in the industry, and they welcomed me with open arms. And then I joined their ministry as a client and went to a healing retreat with them. We do a three-phase healing where you do a phase one, and then after phase one, you can do a phase two, and then after phase two, you do a phase three. And I started meeting with our therapist that we have on staff, and just getting healing about that aspect of my past. And then came on staff and was the first former worker other than Abby to be on staff within Then There Were None. And now get to travel the country and share my story and talk at conferences. And I testify for pro-life legislation, having been on all sides of the story, you know, from being a client in the abortion industry to working in the abortion industry to working at a pregnancy care ministry to help women to being on the sidewalk. You know, I can really share with my experience and try to change the laws of our country and encourage pregnancy centers and give them some tips on things.
I think there are going to be many, many people now praying for you. And that's important because the evilness of what is being done when you take an innocent child and you tear that child apart to get them out of their mother, God does take those children into his arms. I know he does, but it also hurts him. Kelly, we got a few more minutes left. I want to know how your family deals with this. Do they go with you when you speak sometimes?
Before I go there, I want to just touch on one thing you just said about the prayer. Again, if you listen to my story, you'll hear how prayer radically saved my life. But when I worked in the abortion industry, our facility was set up in a way where we couldn't really have people on the sidewalk advocating for moms. And we would occasionally have people screaming horrible things, but we didn't really have a lot of people out there helping. Every so often, we would be in the building, and all of a sudden, our machines would stop working. Our autoclave would stop working. The phones would go down. Something that was vital for us operating would stop working. And someone would turn to somebody else in the office and say, "Is that man and his children outside praying?" And we would open the window, and there was a man and his children who would come every so often and pray outside on the top of a hill outside of our facility, which is as close as they could get. And when they prayed, stuff in our building went wrong so that we couldn't work. And so know that not only are your prayers important for the women who are encountering the abortion option, for people who have experienced an abortion, but pray that God would disrupt what's going on in those facilities, because he will. He does. He absolutely does. So again, I have 6 kids. They are 7 to 15. I do take them every so often on trips with me. It's great for them to see what I do. It is also great because I get one-on-one time with them, which I love. So they very much know what mom does and participate in it as much as they can. They are my biggest supporters. They are absolutely my biggest fans. My husband is a huge supporter for sure. I couldn't do what I do without him, without his love and his support. So it is a family affair in many ways.
As wonderful as that all is, there's still someone missing.
Sure.
More than someone. And that is where we have to turn to God and say, "Will you care for that child until I come to heaven and can hold that child myself?"
Can I tell you a story about that?
Yeah, please do.
I've got a couple quick stories. I'll try to make it very quick because I know time is limited. But this was when I just first gotten saved. I had a dog who was like my best friend. My dog was killed in front of my house. A car hit him. He ran out into the street, got killed. That was the biggest loss other than my abortions, but I hadn't dealt with that yet. That was my biggest loss up to that date. And my dad comes to me one day right after my dog had died. And he said, "You know, Kelly, last night I had a dream." My dog's name was DOG. He said, "I had a dream. And in the dream, I saw DOG in heaven running through a field. And there were 4 children running with him." Now, we can debate whether dogs go to heaven or not. But I instantly knew that those 4 children were my 4 babies that I had aborted. And so it was like, even in that moment, God said, "I've got them." You know, in that moment, that was God reaching out to me. Second story, when I had told all of my children at different times, you know, my story, because it was on the internet, and I wanted them to know, hear from me, and be able to ask questions and things. But my youngest daughter, I waited longer to tell her, and I told her, and all my other kids, their response was, "Mom, we forgive you. Of course, this is what you do. We understand." But my youngest daughter, when I told her my story, she says, "So wait, that means there would have been 10 of us?" And I went, well, honey, I don't know for sure that there would have been 10 of you, because that may have, you know, if I'd had those earlier children, that may have changed some things. But I know for a fact there will be 10 of you in heaven. And she went, okay. And that was like the closure that she needed, and she moved on. It was interesting that the child, you know, that's where she instantly went. And so, you know, I believe what you're saying, Jill.
That's what we're going to go instantly with our listeners. We're going to go celebrate this story, and we're going to tell people how important it is to understand the value of life from the instant it is conceived until its last measures of life in death. We are so blessed by this wonderful conversation with Kelly Lester. Again, she's a great speaker for your pregnancy center. We'll look forward to seeing you next week right here at Choose Life Radio.
The preceding program was sponsored by the Choose Life Radio Network of Canton, Ohio.